Hello and welcome back to the official Scottish Rugby Podcast. It's a packed show this week. Our guests include Scotland captain Stuart Hogg and tennis star Jamie Murray. Plus, we're joined by Sarah Bonner and Lisa Thompson ahead of their big match against Japan this Sunday at the Damhill Stadium.
Joined now by Scotland captain Stuart Hogg, back in camp, still in camp after the weekend. Hoggy, how's the body? That was physical old encounter, wasn't it?
Oh, you're not wrong. There's some battered and bruised bodies. I think I got away quite lightly compared to some of the bigger boys. But now look, it's a lot easier to get back in training when you're coming off the back of a win. So there's a lot of battered and bruised bodies, but a lot of happy faces as well, which is exactly what we're after.
Yeah, there's so much. Well, I mean, there's loads to talk about, loads to look forward to as well with South Africa coming. But I think the first place to start, and the reason I'm starting here is because everybody I've spoken to after the game or around the game mentioned the crowd. You know, Gregor mentioned it. I spoke to Grant Gilchrist immediately after the game. It's the first thing he mentioned it. You mentioned it post-match kind of interviews. It must have had such an effect. How special was it? I know it's this question you get asked the whole time, but it looked to me as if it had an emotional response from the players on Sunday.
I felt like after the last couple of years we've had, I felt like I was almost winning my first cap again.
Really?
It was unbelievable to have, you know, 60-odd thousand people back in Murrayfield. You know, for us, there's no better feeling. And, you know, it's quite special because some of the boys, like Sadui, hadn't experienced the crowd at Murrayfield. So it was special to kind of share that with him. But to have everybody back in was just incredible. You know, for me, as I've said for a long time, there's no better feeling than winning at BT Murrayfield in front of our people, you know, our families, our friends, our supporters. It's just absolutely tremendous, and you know, it's great to have them back, and hopefully this weekend we can perform to the best of our abilities again and get them on their feet again.
Yeah, no, it was such a tense game as well. It's funny because I was doing radio and I said that I'm not sure who will be happier out of the two camps at half time, because I thought obviously we went in ahead, we'd be happy with that, but I felt as if we would be a wee bit disappointed in terms of some of the execution, but the level of physicality, the level of intensity was excellent. Whereas I think Dave and Australia would be frustrated as well. So it was almost, it needed something to spark the game. I thought the game was brilliant in terms of drama, but it needed a spark. And I mean, there was a few sparks, but Ewan Ashman's try, what a finish that was, wasn't it? I mean, the effect that had on the crowd and the players as well, it was just jaw-dropping, wasn't it?
Oh, it was a hell of a finish. I think we had been, you know, chomping at the bit and been there for a while down on their line, and
yeah.
Then Ewan gets the ball off. I think it was Shuey put him away in the corner. And man, that was a finish that any winger would be proud of. And rumour has it he done it for Sale Sharks the other week as well.
is it old hat, as I say?
Yeah,
I didn't see it,
but I think he's got experience of finishing. So now look, it was brilliant. It was great to share that moment with him, obviously winning his first cap. To have such a big impact on the game, coming on early for George. To play the way that he did and to score a try, you know, it was what dreams are made of, wasn't it? But look, for the whole squad, we are building something special. We know that we're more than capable of knocking sides over, but it's having that belief in your own ability and belief in us as a collective that will hopefully drive us forward to then take the next step about where we want to be. And hopefully this week we can take another step closer to winning and achieving something special for us.
Yeah, we'll come on to South Africa in a couple of moments, but just picking up on that point, Hoggy, it's so important. We spoke about belief and we spoke about gaining knowledge and understanding and belief and confidence from being in and around the Lions setup with so many of you in the summer. But actually, where I've found a real a kind of inspiration really is Sunday you had that belief probably just perhaps as favourites as well. So there's a level of expectation against a team who's coming in, having won in five games in the bounce, two against world champions, two against Argentina, beating Japan recently, you know, the world's top performing team really at that moment. And then there's expectation on you guys as well. So it's not just we've got the belief that we can do this. You're actually having that with the pressure of expectation that not a lot of Scotland sides have had before. So does that make it easier to believe, or does it just add another level of challenge to that really strong will and belief that you need?
A bit of both. I think the main thing is that we're gaining valuable experience of being in these big games.
Home and away, if you look at the season. you know, end of last season.
Exactly, exactly. We were challenged this kind of time last year, with it being a Lions year, that for us to have anybody in with chances, we had to be in a position to win away from home. And the first thing we do is we beat England away and we beat France away. Mm-hmm. And before that, we had beaten Wales away. Three massive games that we hadn't done for a long, long time. So it's there. It's there for us. Mm-hmm. And it's just been in a position to gain from this experience. Like, we're learning all the time. Like, it's every opportunity we get to play is another opportunity to grow. And, mm-hmm. and it's just all about making sure that we're constantly learning, we're constantly taking steps forward. But then we're challenging each other as well. We're challenging each other to get the best out of each other, to go out there and express ourselves. But look, I think the thing for us is we get on so well off the field. They got on so well. The vibe around camp is the best that I've ever been involved in. And it has been for the last kind of year and a half or so. Mm-hmm. And every time you come into camp, you learn new things, you enjoy each other's company even more.
You can see that from the outside looking in. You can see it in the way that you train, in the way that you obviously perform, but just how you conduct, you know, on and off the field, you can see that. And the other thing that I thought came out immediately after the game, after such a big win, an important win, a dramatic win really, because the game was so close, was other, as well as the fans having such a big impact, the other key message I picked up from listening to you guys was there's actually more to come. You're actually a bit frustrated with elements of the performance, and you did see areas that can be, you know, either marginal or bigger improvements, and that's a strength of the squad as well.
100%. I think that the good thing for us is that, as I say, we've watched this game back and you know, the coaches will be on their fifth or sixth time of watching it and stuff, but there was a huge number of opportunities that we left out there. There was times that we lacked that clinical edge. We didn't get to multi-phase, or coughed up the ball cheaply, or, you know, fair play to Australia. The Jacko penalties that they got were pretty impressive. But yeah, look, we are a bit frustrated at times because we didn't cross the line. We didn't put them away when we had them. But then it's exciting for us as well because it's there. It's exciting because there's opportunities, and you know, it's something that we'll work on this week is making sure we have that clinical edge and finish them off. But again, another chance for us to grow. But this week it'll be a completely different ballgame. We're going to be coming up against a Russian defence, massive physical challenge, but one that excites us.
Yeah, there's loads of challenges this weekend. We'll maybe, as I say, dump into that in a minute or so. But I'm delighted to say we've got another Scottish icon, sporting icon, join us. This guest got to even upstage you, Hoggy. We've got a 7-time Grand Slam doubles winning tennis player, Davis Cup champion, former world doubles number one, Jamie Murray. How are you? Good to see you, Jamie. You well?
Okay. Hi, Stuart.
Good, thanks.
How doing, mate?
Do you guys know each other?
We met once before. I gave him a kicking lesson when he was at Warrior.
Oh yeah, I remember that. I remember that.
How good a coach was he, Huggy?
Oh, very good, Mossy. Very good. Like, because it. I hate to say it, Mossy, I kicked really well that day, and you weren't at the session.
Right, Jamie, I'm going to come for you for tips. It's great to have you on.
Catch the ball.
It's great that you can jump in and have a chat. But did you see the game at the weekend? The game against Australia? Did you manage to catch
it? No, I was traveling back from Paris, so I didn't see anything. But I assume it was a great result for you guys, right?
Yeah, we came out on top, just a close one. So
yeah,
was it 15-13? I think then. Well, I can't even remember the score. It was right down to the wire. But another reason, big rugby fan, supporter through the Warriors, obviously follows Scotland as well, but you've got an important couple of dates in December. The Battle of the Brits is back up in Aberdeen, and your tournament director as well is playing. You're running the whole thing, Jamie. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, trying to. I mean, we're putting on the event in Aberdeen, Scotland v England. Be six matches across three sessions. So you've got Tuesday evening, Wednesday afternoon, Wednesday evening. Basically putting on the event because, you know, we've got no live tennis in Scotland basically, and you know, if we want to try to sort of build on the interest and legacy that certainly Andy's done for the for the sport in Scotland, then, you know, we need to have live events that people can come down and see it in the flesh. And, you know, selfishly, you know, we want to play in Scotland, and we've had so few opportunities in our career to do that. And, you know, we're not getting any younger, so those opportunities are getting less and less as the years go by. So, you know, that's another reason why we're putting it on. And we're excited to go back to Aberdeen and hopefully put on a fun couple of nights for all the fans.
And do you know everybody who's playing, or there's still places to be filled in terms of competitors?
No, we've got the team lineup. So, I mean, for Scotland, Ali McCoy's actually going to captain us, which should be interesting. and obviously me and Andy will play. Cam Norrie, who just won in Indian Wells a few weeks ago, been having an amazing year. And then Johnny O'Mara from Arbroath, he's ranked around 60 in doubles. So we got a strong team. And then England have got Dan Evans, Kyle Edmonds, Joe Salisbury, who won US Open doubles and mixed doubles this year. He's ranked 3 in the world. And Neil Skupski as well. So basically, we've got the best of the best male players in Britain coming to be part of the event. So it should be good.
Holy. Hoggy, are you a tennis player? Hoyk High School do tennis?
Mate, absolutely not. My hand eye is absolutely abysmal.
Oh, come on.
Honestly, Mossy, terrible. Absolutely terrible. But, mate, the different surfaces on the old tennis, mate, I don't know these could cope.
It amazes me, Jamie, how quickly, I know it's going to sound pretty boring here, but how quickly you cover the space on court, and you don't really realise until you stand on a tennis court how much space there is, because it does look much easier on TV, doesn't it? I mean,
if you're used to watching a rugby match or a football match, then tennis court seem quite small. But I mean, it's obviously, it's intense, the movement, because you're constantly changing direction, recovering, front, back, you know, it's multi-directional. So, you know, it definitely, you know, and also the physicality that these guys have and the levels that they've taken it to over the last, you know, 10, 15 years is incredible. And also, you know, you have to back it up the next day and go again. There's no rest for us. And, you know, regular tournaments in the slams, you obviously get a day off in between matches, but you know, they might play for 5-6 hours sometimes on that day and have to recover and everything, get ready for the following match.
What does your recovery look like after a match? We'll get Hoggy's kind of take as well. But for you, Jamie, as you say, you're having to recover quickly. Is it similar stuff to ice bath and massage?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, right, because we're traveling different places every week, it can be fairly random what access we have to, you know, recovery equipment. But I think the tours and the tournaments have kind of woken up to how important that is for us, that side of the game. And there's definitely a lot more equipment more often at events. You know, so for me, like when I'm out in the States and, you know, we're playing in the heat and everything, I'll always take an ice bath like straight after we play. Just to kind of cool down and stuff. If they have like a hot pool, I would do like hot, cold.
Yeah, contrast.
Which I prefer personally, but most of the time it's just an ice bath or a paddling pool or whatever that we get. So I'll do that. Often I travel, or certainly the bigger tournaments, I travel with a chiropractor as well. French guy, Thomas, actually he's right into his rugby. You know, he gets, you know, kind of puts me back together, make sure everything's kind of in a line and stuff. But, you know, again, it changes. Like, as I get older, I'm much more on top of that because I know that, you know, my career's not forever and I want to max out on it. And, you know, if I can squeeze an extra year or 2 years or 3 years out of it just by looking after myself, then, you know, I'm willing to do it for various reasons.
Yeah, it's really a personal discipline. Hoggy, I mean, you obviously have a physical game on Sunday. This is recording Tuesday afternoon. It's the first real session of the week this afternoon or today. How long does it take you now? Not that I'm suggesting it would take you longer now as you get a wee bit older, but how long does it take you now
to be
fully recovered
And what's the process for you? It's immediate after the final whistle, isn't it? There's a whole process and protocol to go through to get right for next week.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for us is a 6-day turnaround. The challenge that we've got this week to go Sunday to Saturday is massive. And for me, yesterday I woke up and I felt fine after the game, done all the kind of appropriate recovery that we needed to do, and woke up this morning feeling 10 times worse.
The old 2 days recovery bad for you, is it?
Yeah, the old 2 days has got to me now.
48 hours doms.
I'm always like that until I start running around again. Until I start my first session of the week, I still feel a bit iffy. But the big thing for me, like, I just like to try and keep as much heat into the body as I can. So hot baths or the saunas for me, it tends to be the kind of the forwards, the boys that haven't got much between the ears that jump up to their neck in the ice bath. It's all their thing, boys. But it's all very, very individual. And
do you guys do the stuff straight? You go do your recovery straight after the match, or you kind of like do everything like the next day?
Yeah, I think it's different for everybody. It's very individual. I think there's opportunities for ice baths and contrast baths or whatever. And it's all about trying to get on the front foot as quick as you possibly can. And the younger boys can back it up straight away. The boys that are kind of a little bit more experienced, they'll take a little bit longer to get going again. But yeah, like everybody knows what's best for their own body. For me, I just try and rest up as much as I can, get in the heat, massage, etc. And just start ticking over again, because we're straight back into it again today. So I didn't feel great ahead of today's session.
You look good, Hoggy. You look good.
I don't feel great now, but I know come Thursday that when we're back on the training field, I'll be absolutely fine. So I don't stress as much as I used to about my body. So a lot more relaxed, and I think it helps massively.
Immediately after performance is obviously that process starts recovery, but also the process of looking at your next opponent, especially with us in rugby, Jamie. There's, you know, so much information in terms of your opposite number, then the unit you're going to be opposite or working with, and then the team as a whole. How much, I suppose, preparation and analysis of opponents do you do, or do you actually know them pretty well anyway? Is it seldom that you come up against opponents that you don't know particularly well?
Yeah, I mean, I would say it's uncommon that we would play players that we don't know, but it obviously does happen, especially like, you know, if you've got kind of younger up and coming players or whatever, or guys who have maybe been at a certain ranking for a while that haven't necessarily been playing the tournaments you've been playing, they've gotten a run, they're suddenly at the ranking to compete in that. But it's, I would say most of the time I'm getting on court and I know, you know, strengths and weaknesses of opponents. I mean, now actually with the LTA, they actually have quite a good match tagging.
Like almost a database of your opponents.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we can go on to like Dartfish. They use Dartfish.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, they store a bunch of matches there, and we can filter out what we want to see. I mean, in doubles, like, it's very, the first sort of four shots of the rally are like hugely important, and most of the points are won within four shots. So it's very important to know like strategies of your opponents, or not maybe favorite plays, but almost sometimes more importantly, what they don't do. So for example, if they've charted like three or four matches of this team, and I know that this one player basically doesn't serve to this spot on the court, I can protect more of the other spots that he serves to and be ready, because I don't have to worry about him serving wider, for example, because he just doesn't do it. So things like that can definitely make a big difference, because, you know, singles, doubles, like the margins are so small, and even, you know, like Federer would win Wimbledon, but he'd probably only win like 51 or 52% of the points that he's played.
Yeah.
So it's such fine margins, and if you can kind of get that edge or advantage with little things like that, you know, that can pay off at 6-6 in the third set tiebreak, for example. You know,
yeah, no, I've heard that before. A lot of, you know, it could be a 5-set match and there'd be maybe 6 or 7 points overall of a discrepancy, you know, points won. It's just, so it's winning the big points at the big moments, similar to you, Hoggy, when, you know, the momentum's with you, or the
little bits in the game where you feel the momentum. You mentioned it earlier on in the Australia game, after they scored, you had that period of pressure in the lead up to Ash's try, where it became vital that you got points in that window, because if you do dominate territory and possession and then get nothing from it, the knock-on effect is a massive shift in momentum for the defending team, in that case Australia. So it's similar mindset, isn't it? Just getting the big moments right and the key moments in the game.
Yeah, I think the big thing for us is just having that clinical edge. Like, we have to have the kind of killer instinct. When we've got our opportunity, we have to nail it, because you don't get many in international rugby.
How do you get better at that, though? Is it putting you in those positions in training, or is it evaluating what you've done before, or is it staying calm? How do you improve those vital moments, or how do you improve your execution of those vital moments?
I'd probably say it's a bit of everything that you mentioned. I think that the main thing for us is staying in every moment and remaining calm. Like, we've got, you know, two of the best halfbacks in Finn and Ali in world rugby, and they're very, very calm and in control of what they do. It might not seem it at times with Finn, but he's definitely calm and he knows exactly what he's about. So, but yeah, look, we have to be in positions to work hard to get into good areas of the field. And as soon as we get there, we have to keep the scoreboard ticking over in some way. Because on the receiving end of that, when we've defended well and the teams haven't scored, we take and gain a huge amount of confidence for that. And the momentum swings massively in our favour, and it's about what we do next with it. So, you know, there's nothing worse than being in good positions and working really, really hard and getting nothing from it. So, yes, we practice that in training. We make sure we get in the right positions. But again, having that killer instinct to just finish off teams when it's on.
I suppose it's scenario training as well.
See, when you're training, like, are you practicing, like, you know, attacking or whatever, are you practicing like a lot of different sort of like plays that you want to run?
Yeah, so like, we'll have, obviously the coaches will watch, say, South Africa. They've watched South Africa since the summer, all the kind of rugby championship games that they've been involved in. And there'll be clear traits about what South Africa are after, what we're about and where our opportunities then lie. So there'll be analysis done on how they defend, and then it'll soon be flipped on its head to how do we attack against it.
Yeah, okay.
I and the rest of the coaches I'll speak with Finn and Ali about plays to run. And then we'll practice these plays against, you know, so the boys that aren't involved this weekend will be asked to try and replicate a South African defence this week. So we're training against it in the lead up to the game. And you know, we'll try and get these set piece plays to create opportunities. And then, you know, 90% of the game is how we then make good decisions on the ball. We go into our phase shape of, you know, it's pretty simple. It looks like it's chaotic, but there's method in the madness, as we like to call it. And it's just about remaining calm and having that clinical edge when it's on offer. And I think the big thing that we practice from the front row all the way to the back three is our basic skills, our ability to clear out breakdowns, catch pass, get the balls in front, and just have everything done at pace. If we can do that, then we give ourselves good opportunities. But yeah, there's a hell of a lot of work goes in before we actually take the training field, and then we'll review it, then we'll preview it again, and then hopefully come the Saturday we'll execute it.
That takes a massive team effort as well, in terms of, you know, yeah, team, obviously big squad players, but then coaches, management, analysts. How big a team do you have, Jamie?
A lot smaller. We've got it's totally different, because, you know, I'm self-employed. Uh-huh. So I pay my coach. So if I don't like my coach, I can get rid of him or whatever. I don't have to worry about him not selecting me or anything like that. But yeah, I travel with my coach pretty much full time on the road. He's from Edinburgh, so we don't do any training weeks together except in the off season, mainly because it'd be like a 40-45 week job.
Yeah, spend so much time,
which is too much, yeah, for him and just for the relationship and stuff in general. And then I travel, you know, some weeks with chiropractor. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of it, really. Yeah. I've obviously, like, at Roehampton International Centre in London, we've obviously got access there to, you know, physios, massage, other coaches and stuff. And that's where, like, all the match analysis and that is comes from. But in terms of, like, me on the road competing and stuff, normally it's just my coach or my coach and chiropractor, and that's it, really.
Just one thing to pick up on the, I suppose we've gotten pretty deep in terms of preparation and execution, mainly on the physical side of it and the analytical side of it, but on the mental side of it and the health and the well-being. One thing that I've always greatly admired and wondered about tennis players is how you cope with not knowing when the end of the match is. We obviously play 80 minutes and you've got the clock goes in the red, you're counting them, but I've often thought, as tennis players, you could be a second away from winning a match on a match point, and you could still be there an hour and a half later. How mentally, how do you deal with that if you don't kind of execute that match point and you're still out there later on? How do you get back on the right side of that?
Well, like, my coach always says to me, he's like, when do we know the turning point of the match? And you don't until the umpire says game, set, and match.
You
can still turn it around and win, you know, which is one of the great things about the scoring system in tennis, is that you've always got that opportunity to come back. I mean,
so in that moment, if you're facing match point, is that what your mindset is? Is like, here's an opportunity for me to almost
more probably think,
deliver a killer blow.
Lose this point.
This
could be I'm thinking I'm done, and I'm thinking, what time can I get a flight back to London at tonight? But no, it's just what we're used to, you know. Sometimes also it depends. I mean, if you're been playing crap and you're getting crushed, and you know your energy's down, and you're thinking you're done, then it probably is the last point you play. But you know, the thing is, it could be 6-4, 5-4, 40-30, but in doubles anyway, in 20 minutes you could have turned it around and won the match, just because we don't play a third set anymore, we just play a deciding tie break. So there's so many like swings of momentum and things like that. But yeah, that's the thing. I mean, like, Zverev played the other day, he was playing the quarters in Paris, and he had a match point in the second set, and then an hour and a half later he had his second match point and he won. But I think that's what can make tennis really, really exciting, things like that.
Do you see when
it's just a difficult emotion. Sorry, Hoggy.
I'm saying, Jim, when you're prepping for a match, do you go and try and make it as short as you possibly
can? Hoggy.
Or do you try and drag out a game? Up against,
like, if I'm preparing for a match, like, if I'm at a tournament, I mean, we'd probably get like half an hour warm up in terms of on the court. You know, if I'm at home, I'll train longer, because for us, like, the endurance aspect in doubles isn't really there anymore on the main tour. It is at the Grand Slams because it's longer matches, but you know, we're probably playing anywhere from like an hour to, let's say, 2 hours if it's really long now in doubles. So the endurance is kind of gone out of it a bit. So for me, it's more important to train longer when I'm at home training, rather than, you know, so I'm prepared for the matches. But in doubles, like, you kind of have to be ready to go from the first point, because literally every point counts, because we don't have advantage either. So it's just first to four, basically 4 points every game. So you know, if you get out there and you double fault, that's 25% of your service game done there. So, you know, I would always like really get, I prefer to warm up as close to the match as I can, so I go on feeling like I'm warm and I'm ready, I've got my eye, and I don't like to practice and then sit around for like 3-4 hours before going to play. I don't like that, just for more mental thing than anything. I mean, it's not, in reality, I'm not going to forget how to play tennis in that time, but it's just to feel like, okay, my system's up, it's ready to go, and you know, I'm mentally engaged to go and play.
You have a next job mentality as well, Hoggy, from mistakes or those crucial moments, or the moment where you know you do have the opposition under pressure and an error happens, for us in rugby, it is looking ahead, isn't it? Like almost flushing that error and working on the next job.
Yeah, I think the thing for us is making sure that we don't let that affect us. Like mistakes are going to happen. Like nobody's perfect. There's no such thing as a perfect game of rugby. So it's our ability to just, as you say, Mossy, flush it, park it, whatever you want to do. Every individual's different how they get over it, but just concentrate on doing the basics again and making sure that your next job is spot on. So I guess it'll be the exact same, similar thing for you in tennis, Jamie.
Yeah, and the thing is, you will get that opportunity, right? Because the game continues. I mean, for us, you know, we, like I said, you know, if I win a match, I might win a match 6-3, 6-3, which looks pretty comfortable, but in reality, I might have only won like 4 or 5 more points than my opponent. So, you know, we're used to losing points, making mistakes and whatever. And, you know, it's how you bounce back from that and your ability to kind of stay in the moment and not worry about what's gone on, not worry about the finish line and getting excited about winning or stressed that, you know, you might be about to lose, but just the real skill is being able to play like point by point and just, okay, park whatever's happened and okay, next point, what do I need to do? What processes do I need to go to make sure that, you know, I commit to my serve or, you know, focus on making the best return I can and getting our team into the point or whatever and kind of trying to get, you know, part of the sort of outcome, if you like, because that's the killer, isn't it? For all sports people, I think.
And is that easier or more difficult in doubles or singles, if you know what I mean? Dealing with that on your own, on court, where you've got that responsibility, you've got that...
Depends if you've got a supportive partner or not, I think. But you know what, it's, I mean, it'll be the same rugby of football, you know, like you see a misplaced pass in football and, the you know, he's giving it this one and stuff and you know, that's not ideal, I guess, but, you know, everyone's different characters. I've played with loads of different people and, you know, everyone's got their own sort of way of doing things and everyone, you know, different mentalities. You know, one week I'm playing with a Brazilian guy who's like super laid back and chilled and then next week I might be playing with a Russian guy who's like super freaking intense and, you know, kind of just boiling point all the time and ready to go off. You know, the slightest thing happens, like the ball kid drops the ball by mistake in the boiler, you know, something stupid. So you kind of learn how to manage different people. And I think like what I learn more is like how much your energy and mood and stuff can affect the performance of that person that's standing on the court next to you that you're competing with and trying to win with. I'm sure it's the same in, you know, bigger team sports as well. You know, if Hoggy, if the guy's next to you is, you know, butchering it and you're giving him ear to, like, what are the chances of him to come back stronger on the next play and, you know, execute whatever he's trying to do?
I think that's the beauty for us is we get to spend a lot of time with these boys and you understand what works best for every individual. Like, it's all about learning about your teammates and. Some people might need an arm around them. Some people might need a wee jab in the ribs at the same time. It's just finding out about the individual. But there's one person you can, no matter what you say to him, it's not going to make a difference, and that's Finn. So his own little planet, and we'll just let him be because he is one of the best rugby players in the world. So he has the ability to potentially just make a little mistake that some people view it as a big one, but then chuck an outdoor, out the back pass that goes 30 yards, perfect, or a crossfield kick, and he's fine, isn't it? So
that's the thing, isn't it? Like for players like that who are like super creative or innovative, whatever you want to call it, like, you know, you might be tearing your hair out because he's, you know, messed up the pass that's lost you the game, but, you know, 7 days later, he's made something ridiculous and everyone's, you know, loving him and stuff. You got to be a team, isn't it? Yeah.
Exactly. It's the beauty of team and team sport and responsibility and understanding that, you know what, everybody is different, but and you kind of, everybody you know wants to be treated the same, but at the same time, there's nuances that through teamship and spending time together off the field, you figure out and you know how to manage them. So I suppose, Hoggy, just looking ahead to South Africa, what are the key things for Scotland to continue the success this weekend?
I think that the big thing for us, Moss, is just to believe in ourselves, individually and as a collective. And there's a choice. We can either we can go out there and think it's going to happen, or we can go out there and make it happen. And I think it'll be the latter. And now for us, we're hugely excited. We've got the world champions, the a team that are on a bit of form. Battered a fair amount of teams along the way over the last couple of years, and they're coming to BT Murrayfield, and it's, you know, we're hugely excited about the challenge. Back at home, BT Murrayfield, full crowd. Hopefully we can go and do it.
Look forward to it. And Jamie, what's next for you? Are you
I'm going to Turin on Thursday for the tour finals.
Yeah.
So we start on Sunday there, and it's round robin there, so we play three matches regardless, and then try to get through the groups to semis and final, and that's me. That's me done after that.
And when does that? Does that run over 3 days or?
It goes Sunday to Sunday.
All right. So yeah. Oh well, you'll need to find a wee quiet corner and find the TV or your phone to see how Hoggy running through South Africans. So just the Battle of Brits again. It's December, isn't it? It's
December 21 and 22. Yeah.
Right. Up in Aberdeen.
Yeah.
Oh, good luck. Good luck with that. Sure. Listen, thanks a million for joining us. Great.
No, thanks probably for extended that chat. But,
it's great to get two such iconic Scottish sportsmen together and, as I say, talking through different things. And it's amazing how many similarities come out when you've got guys at the top of the tree. So thanks so much for your time. As I say, we'll keep an eye out for you, but we'll talk again pretty shortly. Thanks. Thanks for tuning in.
So we are delighted to welcome to the official Scottish Rugby podcast two of the Scotland women's team alongside myself, Sarah Bonner and Lisa Thompson. Welcome, girls.
Hello, thanks for having us.
That was so formal, Tomo. At least she said something.
You were going to wave on a podcast.
So first of all, obviously back in camp after a fair kind of layoff following the World Cup qualifiers. How has it been being back in camp with the girls?
It's been great. We just love being back in camp, like all of us are just one big family, and that sounds like so cheesy, but honestly I've never been involved in a team that everyone's got each other's back so much, and the way that we're playing and coming along and like the penny's really starting to drop with a lot of things defensively and attack. It's just really exciting to be in camp and literally be with your best pals.
Nice. And what's the vibe like ahead of the weekend?
Real good. Everyone, like Bonner says, like just buzzing to be back in camp. And it feels like ages since we've been together, but it's actually only been like a month. But yeah. Everybody is buzzing to play, especially at Dam Health in Edinburgh after the boys play on Saturday. Yeah, we're buzzing. We're a bit proud. Really excited.
How big do you think it is, like having a new, like a different stadium anyway to play in? Like, how excited are you, and how do you think it will be in terms of a new home in some ways for us to play in the Dam Health Stadium?
Do you know, it's just another opportunity to like really promote and sort of sell the game, and hopefully with the boys' game being the day before, fans will still be in around the city that they'll think, oh, actually, we'll stay and watch the women's game too and come along and support.
How excited are you, Tomo, to have home fans? Obviously, you're from, well, you live in Edinburgh until recently. So how excited are you to play in front of fans? I think the last time we played in front of fans was when we played against Japan, which is almost 2 years ago now. Yeah, mad. So how excited are you to be back out in front of a home crowd?
Oh, buzzing. Like, I think we didn't appreciate how much fans like play a part in it until like having fans back at club and stuff. So to have fans back for Scotland will just be unreal. I think being in that stadium as well, like being and watch some Edinburgh games and Super Six final and stuff, like it's a real good atmosphere in there. So I think to feel that on the pitch will be class. And just the crowd's real tight to the pitch. So yeah, we're super excited. And to be in Edinburgh, closer to home, excited.
Nice. And then maybe a question for Tomo in terms of looking at our squad this week. There's a couple new faces, particularly in the back line, compared to the squad that went to qualifiers. What can we expect from the likes of Holly coming in at nine and Shona out in the wing?
I think like with Shona and Holly, like they've been in and around the squad for a while. So they're definitely like up to speed and absolutely deserve their spot in the squad. So I think like Shona's been in with GB Sevens as well. So she's been away at Canada and playing out there. So she's got a lot of confidence and she has improved so much just with being with Sevens and being like in and around the performance training group as well. And same with Holly. She's been in and around the training group for probably this whole year, I think. And she's at Edinburgh. Is that right? She's at Edinburgh Uni?
Yeah.
Yeah. So like playing a high level of rugby. So yeah, I think we can expect good things and it's real good for the future to have them in and involved.
How, Bonds, how's training been? Obviously we've been in camp for two double days now, two double training session days anyway. How's training been in terms of kind of picking up where we left off in Italy?
Oh, so do you know what? It's been class. Like we've had a month apart and we've come back in. And in terms of just like drill execution and the finer details of stuff, we're nailing a lot quicker than perhaps we might have done in the past. So it's just exciting to be able to start with a decent foundation and something to build on.
Definitely. And then looking ahead to Japan, maybe we could look at this from like a backs point of view and a forwards point of view. What do we expect from Japan? Do you want to go first, Bond?
The Red Arrows. So the last time we played them, literally all I remember was precision lines off of 10. Like, we know that it's going to be quick. They're a fit team. They like to play lots of phases. So it'll be exciting. It's just how we can sort of react to that and stop them, hopefully.
From backs, we, like Bonner said, like they're going to be so quick. Yeah, I remember playing them last time and they were literally all over the place. It was like they had 20 dummy runners every phase. Yeah, just so quick. And like they've got real good skills, like good skill set, good handling. So I think we can expect an exciting game on Sunday.
Mm-hmm. Looking at how obviously they played against Wales at the weekend, and they probably struggled in like specific areas of the game, probably looking at set piece type of thing. How do you think, I guess, is the best way to play against a team like Japan?
I guess from a set piece point of view, it's a real opportunity for us to make progress and headway and drill down our foundations and basics really well, so we can set up a good platform for the backs to play off.
Well, thank you both for joining us briefly on the podcast. I know we are literally just in the door from a busy training day, so much appreciated, and let's go smash it at the weekend.
That's all from us this week on the official Scottish Rugby podcast. As always, thank you so much for listening, and we'll be back next week with more exclusive content.